love. But when you look at the life of Jacob, you will see God's love all over the place, how he cares. Now, before we take a look at Jacob, I want to take a minute and look at what I'm calling God's big picture and see where Jacob fits in to that picture. And I think that's important because it's easy sometimes for us to look at characters in the Bible and Bible accounts and just kind of look at them isolated from other things. And what we're going to see is that Jacob is an important piece of God's work, of his faithfulness. So as we look at all of human history, I'm going to say that we can summarize all of human history in four words, if you put those up: creation, fall, redemption, and restoration. In the book of Genesis, chapter 1 and 2, we see creation, where God created everything that exists. We see that it was perfect. Then in Genesis 3 to 11, chapters, we see what we call the fall. That's kind of shorthand for the fall from perfection, where Adam and Eve, and then since then, everybody else, including us, have turned away from God, and you can call it the downward spiral, because you see things go bad fast as you look at what is happening there. And as the way that God describes our condition after the fall, he uses very strong terms. He says we are slaves to sin. Now, it's not a physical slavery. It's a spiritual slavery. And it's something that can easily be misidentified. Then redemption, and that starts in chapter 12. The story of redemption, and that word, unless you've grown up in the church, is a little strange to you. But it wouldn't have been strange to Jacob. It wouldn't have been strange even to people in Jesus' day, because they understood the word immediately. It meant to buy back from slavery. And the story of redemption is the story of God buying us back from spiritual slavery. And Jacob is an early part. He fits in the early part of that story of redemption. And then restoration, the fall. In the fall, things broke us and the world, and God is fixing what we broke. And that restoration has started, but it won't be fully completed until Jesus' second coming. Now, in the book of Genesis, which is where we see all of this, actually the name Genesis means beginnings. And that's a good name for it because you get in it the beginnings of all the major themes that develop all the way through the Bible. But if you think about it, those first 11 chapters, for creation and fall, chapters 1 through 11, that covers over 1,500 years. So in a sense, God's just speeding through history in those first 11 chapters. And then God comes almost to a screeching halt in chapter 12, because from 12 to 50, about 40 chapters, God only covers four generations: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph and Jacob's other sons. He slows way, way down so we can look at what is going on there. And in Genesis 11 and 12, when you look at Abraham, no indication that Abraham is looking for God at all. Okay, he's one of the peoples that have turned away. Yet God finds him, begins a relationship, and makes some promises. And a few of those promises: one, God says to Abraham, I'm going to do you good and your family. Two, I'm going to make you into a great nation. And then he also says, I'm going to do good to the entire world through you. And as you read the story, you see that Abraham has to wait 25 years for he and Sarah to have that promised son, Isaac. And then things move rather quickly, not nearly as much detail on Isaac. And then we come to Isaac and his two sons, Jacob and Esau. And that's where we get to our passage today, our verses that we have in the bulletin. Genesis 25, starting in verse 20. So remain seated, but let's read this together. Genesis 25, verses 20 to 28. Let's read. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to be his wife, the daughter of Bethuel the Aramean of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Aramean. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, If it is thus, why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, the older shall serve the younger. When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak, so they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man, dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Now I'll ask you to either open your Bibles or turn them on, if you have them electronically, to follow along. We're going to be looking through the rest of Genesis 25 and then into 27 to look at this story, this beginning of Jacob and what is going on. But if you look at what we just read and you do the math, you'll see that Isaac and Rebekah had to wait 20 years for the children, for Jacob and Esau. And we're never told why they had to wait that long. When in verse 22, we're told that the children, when she's pregnant, the children were struggling within her. Now, so she's going to talk to God. But also keep this in mind. I am sure that as he was growing up, Isaac was heard several times the account of God coming to Abraham and making these promises, and then Abraham's adventures and travels, and that Isaac was the promised son. And I'm sure that in those 20 years before the boys were born, that Rebekah heard that from Isaac. And so she recognizes that one or more of her children are going to be part of the line of the promise. And here now, she's waited 20 years, she's pregnant, but there's this struggle going on in her womb, and she goes to God and asks God what is happening, and he answers. And he says in verse 23, you've got two nations, two peoples inside of you, and they're divided. That means they're incompatible. They don't get along. They won't get along. But he doesn't stop there with explaining why the struggle within her. He also then gives a prophecy and says the older will serve the younger. And what he means by that is that the younger son, we know to be Jacob, is going to get the blessing and the birthright. Now, that's kind of unfamiliar to us because we don't talk about that anymore. But cultures in that day practiced what sociologists call primogeniture. And that is where the oldest son inherits either all of the estate or a large majority of the estate when his father dies. Even in the Bible, you read that the firstborn will get a double portion. So, for example, if my family with me and my siblings lived back then, I have two other brothers, so there's three boys, and I'm the youngest. When my dad died, the estate would have been divided four ways. My older brother would have gotten two parts. My brother Tim and me would have gotten one each. So primogeniture gives the majority of the estate to the older, to the firstborn. Now that seems very foreign to us because we think first in terms of individuals. In that culture then, and even in some cultures today, they think first in terms of family and in continuing the family name. And so they have this birthright or something like that. So according to the custom, Esau, since he was the firstborn, he should have received the blessing and inherited the majority of the estate. But God, even before they're born, is choosing otherwise. Now that word blessing, we know it. We use it. Somebody sneezes, we say, bless you. Okay? But it's actually a lot richer than that. Blessing means to use words to bestow good or favor on someone. It can also mean to affirm or approve someone. And blessing was very important back in that day. And when you look, as we get to it this morning, with Isaac blessing Jacob, what Isaac does is he asks God to do good to Jacob. But have you thought of this? You and I cannot bless ourselves. Our culture tells us to. In fact, our culture, whoa, thank you. I have power now. Our culture actually tells us, you approve yourself. You shouldn't look to anybody else for approval. In fact, you should never give the power of approval to somebody else. You should keep it for yourself. But you know what? That just doesn't work. It is not the same. It does not carry the weight of me approving myself, patting myself on the back, saying, Mark, you're such a good person. Just does not carry the same weight when somebody that you respect blesses you and says good about you. My favorite high school teacher was Mr. Baker, my 10th grade biology teacher. He was this short little guy with a flat top haircut and a string tie because we were in Texas. And every week I could expect when I walked in, he would have a new saying written up on the corner of the board. And I remember we sat on these at these long work tables and sat on stools, and he made biology come to life, and I just really enjoyed him, and I thought he was a great teacher. We had an open house that year, and my dad came, and I'm sure my dad came to other open houses, but I don't remember them. I remember this one, because my dad and I came into the classroom. There were a couple of other students and families there. Mr. Baker came up and introduced himself to my dad, and he turned to my dad and said, Mr. Hayes, and he points to me. He says, you ought to be proud of your son because Mark can do anything he sets his mind to. Now, that was a long time ago. I have never forgotten that. I don't remember the names of most of my other teachers, but I remember Mr. Baker. Blessing is powerful. The words are powerful, and we cannot bless ourselves. Well, in verse 28, you see something that's going to show itself in later weeks. You see favoritism. In verse 28, it says, Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. So Isaac loved Esau because he liked his food. And Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, the word Jacob has meaning. We don't really think of words, names having meaning today, but they did back then. And Jacob means dogging someone else's steps. Now, there can be a positive side to that. It can mean that a young man named Jacob is determined. And you look at his life and you'll see, yes, Jacob was determined. But it also has a negative connotation. Not just that you're dogging someone else's steps. And he was called that because when they're born, Jacob has grabbed hold of Esau's heel. But it can also mean grasping and selfish. And you see that in Jacob. And I think that's one of the reasons why God changes his name later. Well, right after the birth account, the writer of Genesis gives us another small but very important snapshot of an incident when Esau and Jacob were grown, if you'll put that one up. Genesis 25, starting verse 29. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field, and we're kind of reading between the lines, but it looks like he went hunting, and this day he didn't get anything. And he's exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted. Therefore, his name was called Edom. Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. Sharp man. He's a sharp dealer. Okay? Sell me your birthright. Esau said, I am about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me? Pause for a second. When you read the Bible, do you read it in a monotone? Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. Esau said, No. They're live people. Esau said, I'm about to die. What use is a birthright to me? Jacob said, swear to me. Swear to me now. So he swore to him and sold his birthright. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. And then the writer gives a commentary. Esau despised his birthright. So you can see Jacob and his scheming, and he sees an opportunity, and you can see that Esau is not looking beyond the moment. What good is it? Now, so he swears and he gives it away. You can't make this kind of stuff up. This isn't myth. This is real people. But now we come to the big deception, what Jacob is really known for. And that's in Genesis 27, starting in verse 1. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, that is, he was blind, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son?" He answered, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and prepare for me delicious food such as I love." Remember his favoritism. Isaac loves Esau's food. "So go out and go hunting, get me something, and fix it just the way I like, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." The end of verse 4 is the key. Isaac wants to give the blessing and the birthright to Esau. Isaac is deliberately ignoring God's prophecy, what God said should happen. Well, Rebekah is listening to this conversation, and she hears Isaac talking to Esau, and she knows the prophecy. So she decides, all right, if he's not going to listen to God, I'm going to help him out. So she goes and finds Jacob, and she tells him what she wants him to do, and that starts in verse 8. "Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me 2 young goats so that I may prepare them from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat so that he may bless you before he dies." But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I will seem to mocking him and bring a curse on myself and not a blessing." Now notice what Jacob doesn't say. He didn't say, "Mom, how could you possibly tell me to lie to my father?" That's not anywhere in the picture. No, he's already thinking ahead. Okay? He knows what she wants him to impersonate his brother. And he knows that he's not this hairy, you know, monster kind of guy. He's got really smooth skin. Now, and so you look at his concern, and his big concern is, "Mom, I don't want to get caught. I know about the prophecy. You know about the prophecy. Dad, for whatever reason, is not paying attention. But if I get caught while I'm doing this, I'm going to get cursed." And then in verse 13, Rebekah responds. She says, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get the goats." Now, Rebekah did not know that as a result of this deception, she would never see Jacob again. We'll see that next week. So Rebekah fixes the food, and while she's fixing the food, Jacob goes and gets into Esau's closet and gets his clothes and puts them on, and he goes and gets some skin, some animal skin, and he fits it over his hands and on the back of his neck, because that's where his dad, you know, the rest of it's covered with, you know, his robe. And he figures, hey, if I'm going to pull this off, I need to be very careful how I do this. So then we get verse 18, where we have the actual interaction and the deception. So I'm going to kind of summarize what goes on here. Rebekah fixes the food, tastes just the way Isaac likes. Jacob has made all his preparations. He takes the food in to his tent to his father Isaac, who, remember, is blind. And notice how the account actually speaks to every one of his senses. He's blind, he cannot see. If he could see, he would know immediately, this is Jacob, not Esau. And so Jacob comes in, and I wonder if he tried to change his voice. "Hey, Dad, this is Esau. Got your food here. Let's go ahead and eat, and then give me the blessing." Isaac says, "You sound like Jacob. Are you Esau?" "Yes, I'm Esau." "Yes, I'm Esau." So Isaac feels his hand and his neck. It's hairy. Okay. All right. So that's a check mark in the Esau column. He asks again, "Are you really Esau?" "Yes, I am Esau." Isaac eats the food. It tastes just the way he likes. Check mark again under the Esau column for taste. And then he gets up to kiss him on the cheek and he smells his robe. Oh, yes. That's an outdoor smell. They didn't wash their clothes that often, I guess. Okay. Smell column. So, one over here sounds like Jacob, all these others, okay, Esau, so he gives them the blessing. May God give you of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and of plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. That's the blessing. It's finished. Jacob grabs up the dishes, and out the door he goes. And it's, again, almost like you'd see in a movie, out one door, and in the next comes Esau. And Esau really sounds like this: "Hey, Dad, I'm back. I got the food." And Isaac says, "Who are you?" And notice what Esau says. I'm Esau. I'm your son. You're firstborn. Remember, firstborn, blessing, birthright. You promised to give me the birthright. And Esau says, "I just blessed somebody else." And yes, and he shall be blessed. And as soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceeding great and bitter cry, and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, my father." They both recognized right there, Jacob was the one who got the blessing. Isaac knew it, and Esau knew it. And as we'll see next week, Esau was really ticked off. He was mad. Isaac, you wonder, why? Well, two things to catch. Jacob deceives Isaac with Rebekah's help and her encouragement in order to get the blessing that Isaac should have given to Jacob freely. In fact, from the time they were born, they should have been told, "Guys, you know, this is how things work normally, but God has other directions, and so we're going to switch things." He didn't do that. Isaac favored Esau all the way up until this point. And he refused, was trying to go around what God said. So all this deception only for exactly what God said needed to happen to happen. And as you look at it, and I think Greg mentioned it, all four major players are in the wrong. Isaac refused to listen to God's prophecy. He's rebelling. Rebekah decided to take matters in her own hand and deceive her husband. Jacob was a very willing partner, mostly willing partner, to that deception and actually carried it off. And Esau, even though he'd already sold his birthright, despised it, thought, "Well, hey, look at this deal. Who can blame me if Dad gives me the birthright anyway?" And so he's going after it. But you might be wondering, as soon as Isaac realized the deception, why didn't he call Jacob in on the carpet, get him in front of him and say, "That's it, bud. You just lost it." Okay? And exactly what Jacob feared, why didn't it happen? Why didn't he lose the blessing and get cursed? Because I think right at that point when Esau comes in and says, "Hey, Dad," and he realizes that what his ears had said really was true. It was Jacob he gave the blessing to. I think right at that point, Isaac realized, "I have been fighting against God in this. And God was right. And Jacob got the blessing. I'm not going to fight anymore." And Jacob keeps the blessing. Now, you read further in Genesis and you see that God does do good to Esau. But here's another thing. As you read the Old Testament, you look at the life of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the Bible never says that they deserve God's kindness, that they deserve God's goodness. And actually, the Bible never says that you or I do either. And as you look at this story, and we're going to look further at the life of Jacob, and I think you'll see it as we go further along, that the deception we see today is just the beginning, that things get worse. Jacob is shown to be worse, and yet God never backs off from his promise that he was going to love him and do good to him. That's a scandalous kind of love, because you look at that and say, why in the world would you ever love a jerk like Jacob? Yet he does. Well, let's bring all of this forward to today. First, the power of blessing. Words are powerful. They are powerful both for affirmation and approval, like Mr. Baker gave me. They're also powerful for condemnation. There are plenty of successful adults today, maybe even a few here today, that even though you are successful, you're still striving to disprove your parents. Because at some point when they were angry with you, they said, you are a failure. You are worthless. You will never amount to anything. And so people are working to try to prove to themselves and to their parents, yes, I can be successful. I am. But when is enough enough? It isn't. Words are powerful. So be careful how you speak. Second, we all need blessing. We all want approval. That's how we're made. And it just doesn't satisfy when we try to approve ourselves. It just doesn't. Third, all of us, at one time or another, act like Jacob trying to get a blessing. We pretend to be somebody we're not in order to get somebody else's approval. I can remember as a teen at times saying, as I looked at clothes, my whole thought was, will I look acceptable to other people in these clothes? That's what I wanted. I wanted other people to accept me. Yeah, I know we just lost some lights for some reason. It's okay, we're almost done. But here's the thing. If you and I, whenever we do pretend in some way to try to get somebody's approval, and if we get it, it's hollow. Because we've been wearing a mask. The mask got the approval, not us, and we recognize it. But we want approval and we need it. But then also, just like Jacob, you and I don't deserve God's approval. We don't deserve God's love. But he gives it anyway. And so God's love and mercy and his forgiveness wasn't just scandalous in the Old Testament. It still is. And here's how God can love us. And it's amazing that you can take the elements from the story that we just saw and see how they fit with Jesus, because there's a firstborn and there's dressing up and there's a blessing. You see, the Bible tells us that Jesus is the firstborn of the universe. The Bible also tells us that you and I, all of us, have rejected God in one way or another, and we deserve God's justice and punishment. But on the cross, which we sang about, Jesus, the firstborn, dresses up like us. Just like Jacob dressed up as Esau, Jesus, in a sense, dresses up like us, and he takes the curse for us. And he satisfies God's justice so that God can accept us and love us and still be just. And as a result of that, you and I get to participate in the firstborn's blessing. You and I get to participate in all the good that God gives. And just like God blessed all of us through Abraham and through Jacob, God also can do good to others through us. God's love is astounding and it is scandalous. Let's pray.